here this morning, the book of Genesis, chapter 29. And this is a chapter with a subject of which by no means am I an authority. And that's love at first sight, right? But we're going to have to deal with it. So we'll be studying this morning in the book of Genesis, chapter 29. You're probably far more here well qualified to teach this, but and have experienced this love at first sight. But anyway, Jacob is going to find the love of his life as we look into this particular chapter. Be some lessons that will be learned in it, however, and important lessons of life. Genesis chapter 29. Verse 1. So then Jacob went on his journey, came into the land of the people of the east. He looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. And thither were all the flocks gathered. They rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in his place. Jacob said unto them, My brethren, whence be ye? They said, Of Haran are we. He said unto them, Know ye Laban the son of Nahor? And they said, We know him. He said unto them, Is he well? They said, He is well. Behold, Rachel his daughter cometh with the sheep. He said, Lo, it is yet high day. Neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them. And they said, We cannot, until all the flocks be gathered together, till they roll the stone from the well's mouth, and then we water the sheep. While he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. It came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth, watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. It came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, her sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him, kissed him, and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. Laban said to him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. He abode with him the space of a month. Laban said unto Jacob, Because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall be thy wages, or thy wages being? Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, It is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. And Jacob said unto Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. It came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter, brought her to him, and he went in unto her. Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpha, his maid, for a handmaid. It came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, What is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said, It must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And Jacob did so, fulfilled his week. He gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also, and Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, Bilhah, the handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son. She called his name Reuben, for she said, Surely
The Lord hath looked upon my affliction, now therefore my husband will love me. She conceived again and bare a son and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And you might want to pronounce it Simon. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore was his name called Levi. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. So we see now some things about Jacob that I think are of real interest and certainly should be instructive to us. This, in one sense of the word, is a beautiful story. It's also a sad story. Much of life in this account that we have today. Seems like most of the time life seems to be going backward, and consequently it always brings heartache. But nonetheless, the interesting story. First of all, in the first part of the chapter, you'll notice the word then. This is immediately after the experience where Jacob had to pillow his head on a rock, in turn after the vision of the ladder that extended from earth to heaven, and the angels ascending and descending on it, and the promise that God made to him, and the covenant and the agreement that he, or actually it was more of a pledge that he made to God to give the tenth unto the Lord if he would do everything he said he would do, and certainly God's going to do that. The Bible then tells us, then Jacob. In other words, after this experience with the Lord, he got up then the next morning. The Bible said he took the pillow, the stones he'd had for a pillow, and he made a pillar, and there he worshipped the Lord. So there's a first lesson here in this chapter, that there are some lessons to be learned from first experience or conversion. We have the opportunity and the privilege in our life to have some high experiences. Normally, one of the high experiences in life is conversion. Time whenever we become a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, and certainly things are transformed in our life, things change. When the Lord saved me, it was quite an emotional experience. And I never depart from truth to build and try to establish experience as truth. I know people that do. I have talked with people that said, well, I know this is true because I've experienced it. That's a very poor basis for truth. We experience a lot of things in life, but when the Lord saves, it is an experience. And we sometimes have forgotten that in this day, and consequently, we have a lot of preaching today that comes to the point that you can become a believer and not ever know it. A friend of mine used to say, if you can be saved and not know it, you can lose it and never miss it. I think I understand what he meant by that. It is an experience in our lives, so it's a high point in my own life. The salvation experience was a high point. When the Lord saved me, delivered me from sin and death. And in this particular case, Jacob has a high experience in his life. It would be needless to say this morning that to have such a vision as he had of the ladder that reached from heaven to earth, and the angel of God ascending, descending on it, and then the Lord to commune with him as he did that night and make the promises that he'd go with him wherever he went, he'd keep him wherever he went, he'd bless him wherever he went, he'd bring him back again to that place. That was quite an experience to have. And so that will then cause Jacob to go on with much joy and expectation. And so we find Jacob now from a low place in his life where he had to leave home and he has to pillow his head on a rock. Now he's of a far higher spirit than he was at that particular time before the experience of the conversation with the Lord. And I think the Lord allows us certain places in our life of high place and experience that we might live the ordinary with a hope and expectation. It's sad to say this morning, a lot of people live every day of their life. They're always hoping for a miracle today and looking and looking for something high. The most of our lives will be lived in the ordinary fashion. Even you study the lives of the great men. And there were years in the life of Abraham, as we've studied his life, where there's not really anything said of him. He's living an ordinary life. In other words, he's getting up in the morning, he punches the time clock, he works his day and comes home just like you do. I'm speaking hyperbolically there, that he'd had to punch the, probably a, what do you call it, where you turn a sundial, you'd had to punch that. But what I'm saying is that he lived an ordinary life. But also he had those high experiences in his life. And the truth of the matter is the Lord blesses us with those experiences in our lives, and especially the experience of grace, so that we can face life with all the ordinary ups and downs of it. And Jacob has that kind of experience now to go on. And it carries him all the way into the land of the east, where his mother's people are. And there he will certainly then know the blessing of the Lord being upon him and the sustaining power of God in his life. So this part of it, it certainly should be a lesson to us as we think about the experiences that we've had and how that it helps us then to go through the ordinary and to embrace even the things of life as they come with some hope and expectation that we would not have had otherwise. It's often been said, and I would repeat it this morning, I don't know how folks get along without the Lord. To face the ordinary experiences of life with all of its upheaval without the Lord, it would be a very devastating thing. But thank God for His sustaining grace today. And He has those sweet experiences for us in our lives where we stand on a high plane, and that sustains us as we go on the way. And so the promises that He has received from the Lord will carry Jacob along to his uncle's house. And here then, as he goes, he does experience the providence of God. It would be a far stretch of the imagination to think that just by chance a fellow would stop at the right well and Rachel would come out with a flock. That would sure be begging a point. I just believe that that's chance. We have to understand the providence of God, that God works in our lives. And in this particular case, He's working in Jacob's behalf. That's what He said He was going to do. Jacob is not going alone. The Lord's going with him. And there could have been other wells he could have chosen, but he finds a well and he finds men that know Laban. You notice they just say he's well. They may have really known Laban. Jacob will get to know him. And he'll have some experiences with his uncle that will be some lessons. You talk about a supplanter. He finds a super supplanter when he comes to Laban's house. But it'll be interesting in Jacob's life, and he'll learn some lessons that he has to learn. That God will be working in his own marvelous way, preparing this man Jacob for what lies before him. But nonetheless, we find that he comes to a certain well. He then inquires about Laban, and they say, "We know him, and he's well." And they point out, in fact, here comes Rachel, his daughter, with a flock of sheep. And we would have to assume this, and I don't believe I'm reading into it anything. I think that it must have been, honestly, from Jacob's standpoint, love at first sight. Now, I don't know that Rachel had the same feelings for Jacob. I dare say she didn't. I think there was another that fell in love with Jacob. We'll see that as the plot unfolds for us here this morning. But nonetheless, he sees Laban's daughter, Rachel, as she's coming with the sheep. And in verse 7, Jacob now will try to set up the scene. He tries to get rid of these other herdsmen. If you've ever wondered why he said anything to these keepers, I mean, it wasn't any of his business whether they stayed at the well or not, but he tried to make it his business. And so he's making a suggestion that they get out of the way so he can talk to Rachel by himself. None of you guys have ever done that. You've never tried to run the other guys off so that you could talk to the girl by yourself. I know none of us here ever had that kind of experience. Or you girls, certainly you wouldn't run everybody else off just so you'd had the opportunity to speak to the fellow by yourself. But we see it unfolding here in verse 7. He said, "Lo, it is yet high day. Neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water you the sheep and go and feed them." But they wouldn't do it. They were kind of fellas, they didn't want to get out of the shade, so they said, "No, we'll just hang around till everybody else waters their flock." And I worked some fellas like that, too. You could suggest at noon that they go on to work and work another half a day, but they didn't seem to want to. But anyway, that's the scene that we have. Jacob is trying to set up this encounter. Apparently, he saw Rachel as she came, and certainly I have no trouble believing that he was smitten by her beauty and her presentation of herself. She's described for us in verse 17. Leah was tender-eyed. In other words, she's the weepy kind of woman, but Rachel, the Bible said, was beautiful and well-favored. In other words, her countenance is beautiful, and also she's a very shapely woman. That's what the Bible describes for her. So it attracted Jacob. I mean, he was smitten by her. So he wants to have an audience with her by himself. You talk about a love story. This is a love story. If you've never experienced one, I read this one and enjoy it vicariously. It's just laugh. Were you smitten by Ed, Margie? I mean, you seem to be enjoying this lesson. You don't remember. I'm glad Ed's gone. I'd hate for him to hear that. I'm pretty well persuaded Ed was smitten by her. Yeah, but anyway, we see the story as it unfolds here. When Rachel came, and he then will introduce himself. He shows an act of kindness by rolling the stone from the well. Apparently this was something maybe that a woman would have difficulty doing, if not impossible for her. And so he rolls the stone from the well. He waters the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And then he gets bold and he kissed Rachel. And now this is not one of them mushy kisses. I understand this is a kinfolk kiss on Rachel's part. Jacob, actually, it was a greedy. Don't read into it more than it is. I'm. but he kissed her and then he said to her that I am your daddy's brother, actually, which then he points out that actually he's the son of Rebekah, Laban's sister. And she ran and told her father. And then we're introduced to Laban, and he's a mixed character. Laban is you find him oftentimes in the world, this type of personality. There's that good side of him where he's benevolent, he's outgoing, he's kind and receptive. But then behind the scenes also, there's that conniving part of Laban that we'll see as well. Laban heard of the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he, when he heard it, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. In other words, he relayed the story of how he had to leave home and why he's there and all that was going on. And then, after about a month, Laban, in a very subtle way, points out to him that he needs to be paying his own way, but he wants him to have wages for what he's done. He's been in the house for some time, and no doubt Jacob settled in. I can remember some experiences in my life when I ran across people. They had a way of getting in a comfortable place, and they'd settle in. In other words, if somebody's making a living and there's food on the table, it's easy to settle in. You know, you don't. You're not nearly as prone to look for a job when you're well-fed as you are when you're hungry. It's a kind of a characteristic of life that one fellow said in a campaign about three presidents ago. He said, "Hunger is a good incentive to work." And I can agree with him. And so Laban will say to Jacob, now, it's not right for you to serve for nothing. And what he's saying to Jacob is, now, you're going to have to go to work, boy. It's time to pick up the responsibility that's yours. And he said, what'll your wages be? He said, I don't want you to serve for nothing. But he, in a subtle way, he's saying to him, it's time to go to work. I mean, the visiting and the introduction's over. This is serious now. You're here, and it's time to go to work. That's basically what Laban is saying to this man, Jacob. And Jacob then will make known what he's willing to do. The Bible, of course, tells us here that Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Now, I believe you're going to see the providence and the purpose of God as it's served, and it will not be the desire of the flesh. Jacob, the Bible tells us here, loved Rachel. And he said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Now, that is love. I mean, for a guy to be willing to go to work, and especially to go to work for Laban, for 7 years, for a wife. I don't know if we've got anybody. Has anybody here worked 7 years for his wife? Not a one, have we? Yeah. Was it true love then? We have to put the question on it, true love. But in Jacob's case, he's smitten. It's true love. He's willing to serve. And there's some things said about it. In verse 20, and Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Love makes us look at life in a totally different perspective this morning. It certainly does, whether it be to a person, but especially as we look at it in the light of God's great love for us, and I hope our love for the Lord. I hope as we walk this pilgrim's way and we serve, that we look at life as just a short time. Even though it might be extended number of years of service for our Lord, and it might be even filled with great difficulties, I trust we would count it as nothing and a very light thing in light of the Lord's love for us, and especially in turn our love for the Lord Jesus Christ. But Jacob is willing to serve for the 7 years. He does serve the 7 years, and I mean, this man has spent, and after 7 years, he's still in love. That's something a little foreign to our society today. Still be in love after 7 years. Usually the honeymoon's over pretty quickly. And then reality sets in, and things are different. But here Jacob served the 7 years, and he's still just as much in love the seventh year as he was the first day. He still loves Rachel, and he served for her. And after he served his 7 years, in verse 21, you'll notice that he calls Jacob, or Laban rather, to task and ask him to fulfill his commitment. In other words, he served for his wife, and now he wants his wife. And he said, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. Now we see the other side of Laban. What he is going to say after this transaction is probably the truth. It probably was a custom of the country. He just failed to inform Jacob about it at the start of it. Have you not somewhere in your life entered into a contract with somebody, and when he got down to the end of the contract, they said, well, now this is what we really meant by what we said here, but they didn't explain that at the start. They waited till you'd gone through the program, and it's going to cost you another $100, $1,000, or $2,000, and then they explained why that it was like that this is the way it was. Well, this was Laban for us. When Jacob entered into the agreement and agreed to the wages, Laban didn't bother to tell him that we have a custom that Leah has to get married first. But after the situation arises, then he will explain that to him. But Laban then, in response, gathers together all the men of the place and made a feast. It came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him and went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpha, his maid, for a handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? Or why have you treated me as such, and have betrayed me, and tricked me as you have, and cheated me even? That's what he's saying. But let me point out something here. I think that you see another love that has arisen during this time, and it's Leah's, on Leah's side. Tragically, apparently Jacob at least had to live to be an old man before he ever really began to accept Leah as, in the providence of God, the one that God wanted him to have. On the other hand, Leah has fallen in love, no doubt, with Jacob. I think that probably we see as strong a love maybe on Leah's part for Jacob as Jacob had for Rachel. And so we see a situation that has arisen here, and Leah's father, Laban, will set the customary feast. Actually, this was a feast that would go on for about 7 days. At the end of that 7 days, in the shrouds of the night in darkness, then the wife actually would be brought with heavy veils to the tent, and then this would be the consummation of this marriage ceremony. So some have wondered, well, how could Jacob be deceived? Couldn't he see? Well, knowing the custom, he could have been deceived as he was. We have him standing out in front here and in the light, and most of the time the veils are thin enough so we can see that it's the right bride for the right groom. I mean, there was not any question. Last Saturday, as we did the wedding, you could see both of them. We understood that they were the couple that had presented themselves to get married. But in this particular case, and looking back into the custom of the time, it certainly was very possible for Jacob to be deceived and not know anything till daylight. And then when daylight comes, then he's smitten and heartbroken, no doubt, by the transaction that has occurred, and he wakes up and there's the weepy-eyed one, Leah. And he's disappointed, to say the least. And no doubt I'm sure he was crushed. And this is the time in his life when he's going to have to remember the promise of God that God's with him. And your life may be filled with such experiences as this. I mean, you have all the high expectations, the thoughts of great happiness, and you wake up and there's Leah. I mean, you're going to have to know the promise of God then to believe that God is still with you, that He has not forsaken you. Now, I'm persuaded, actually, to look at this, that in God's own sovereignty, that He intended for Leah to be the wife. And Jacob, in the latter part of his life, I think we can see some hint of that as we get to it. We won't go into it this morning. That he finally accepts that. But because of the situation, it does cause great trouble. And you'll see a dysfunctional home. Jacob's home, even though God blesses that home and will raise a great nation out of that home, polygamy is not a good practice. I don't care who recommends it, it's not a good practice. It always creates difficulties in the home. And in this particular case, there'll be two wives now instead of one. So Laban, you see his subtle side. You see the same conniving nature that was in Rebekah, his sister, and has been passed on to Jacob, the supplanter. I mean, it's a family trait. And Jacob has met the master supplanter here. And he's deceived, and he receives Leah to be his wife. And when morning came again, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "And why have you done this? And what have you done to me?" Then Laban explains the contract, the fine print in the contract, in the clause, that it's just not a custom, and we can't allow a younger daughter to be married before an older one. If you had an old, ugly daughter, it'd be tough on the younger ones. I mean, you got to get rid of the old one and the ugly one first. But Laban did it. Now, I don't think Leah was probably all that ugly. She was just a kind of a clingy woman. And Jacob wasn't looking for a clingy woman. He wanted a good-looking woman, a beautiful woman. And you see the characters here. They're still human nature's the same. You find all characters. You'll run across Laban. You'll run across Jacob. You'll find Rebekah and all the rest of them. And you find a lot of the traits in yourself. You'll be honest and look in the mirror. And just be honest about it. You'll find a lot of the traits of the Bible characters that still course in our veins today. But anyway, when he woke up to Leah, he confronted Laban. And Laban then explained it. It must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Then he, what is the old saying, he drops the other shoe. He said, fulfill her week. In other words, if you'll contract another 7 years, you can have Rachel. Now let me point out that he did not have to serve another 7 years. Excuse me. Something's in the air and it's bothering me this morning. But I'm not weeping over Leo or Jacob, either one. Anyway, Laban, here he is now. He's already been thinking ahead. He said, it's a pretty good deal for Rachel. I mean, for me, for Rachel's sake, I've got 7 years of labor. He said, if I work this right, I said, I can get at least 14 years out of this fellow.
And so he gave Jacob Leah.
And now he said, all you got to do is just serve another 7 years, and you can have Rachel. And he agrees to that. Apparently, we find again still the power of love in his land. He's willing to serve another 7 years. Now, he, in this particular case, does not wait the 7 years. In the wording here, I think you'll see that actually Rachel is immediately given to him, but he serves the 7 years for her. In other words, he does not have to wait, but he has now two wives rather quickly, and this would certainly not be the best way to start a family. I mean, can you imagine how Leah felt? I mean, she's got her husband, and all of a sudden, there's a second wife in the house. I mean, this starts out difficult, and it makes it a difficult situation for everyone. But Jacob, again, he's willing to serve the 7 years, and the Bible tells us here, and Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave Rachel his daughter to wife also, and Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, the handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. In other words, he took Rachel, that he served 7 years afterwards. But because of the love that Jacob had for Rachel, Leah's love for Jacob, and the lack of love between Jacob and Leah, it certainly made the home tense, to say the very best. And it was the atmosphere, no doubt, would be thick in that home because of the situation. And then Leah, is blessed of the Lord. However, she has a misconception. And this is a misconception that many have. And there's a lot of children been born because somebody was trying to salvage a marriage. A child will not salvage a marriage. If a marriage is on the rocks and it's destined for demise, the child will just complicate matters. But Leah, in her thinking, will think that I have a son now, he'll love me because I've given him children. And Rachel was barren. The one that Jacob loved is barren, and Leah was able to give him descendants, give him children. And children were important in that day, and I think they're still important today. I do think it's like the farmer said, there's not much money in kids anymore, but when he used to have the large farms, you could raise a large family, and it helped some to have some husky boys to help plow and harvest the crops. But that's another story. But here, Leah, she conceived, and this is actually from a divine standpoint, and this is an act of God, for he said, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Children are a heritage of the Lord. I'm persuaded that children are still a gift of God, as we find them presented to us in the Bible. I think it's a tragedy when a nation will look with disdain upon the children of that nation and allow them to be slain without any protection. I cannot and will not ever in any fashion defend abortion. I just don't believe it's right. I believe it's murder in the sight of God. Children are a heritage of the Lord and given by His own design. But Leah then conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. And you'll notice these sons are named for the act has been performed. Said, surely the Lord has looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. And the name Reuben is a son, which would certainly mean a great deal to Jacob, because every man wants somebody to carry on his name, his family name. Even in our Western culture, we still like to have somebody to carry on our name. And I'd like to think there'll be another generation of stones around, and just they'll feel the same way. Well, this man, Jacob, she thinks will be impressed by the son. And so she called him name Reuben, which means a son. And that, in that sense, would be a blessing of God. She conceived again by her son. And this time she talks about how the Lord has heard. So she named him in that sense, hearing, Simeon. And then she conceived again and bare a son. And this time she called him Levi. She said, surely he'll be attracted to me and attached to me. He'll be one that's just
bonded to me talking about Jacob. And so she called his name attached or attached to. And then finally she bare the name of the one son, and his name is actually in praise to the Lord, because she counts him then a gift of God that will make the bond even closer between Jacob and Leah. That's her thinking. And she said, I'll praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah, which actually I think if you look into it, you find praising would be his name. So she named the sons in regard to how she felt. And it didn't really work that way, but that's how she felt. But God blessed Leah, you see, and gave the sons. Now, you have to see in this the providence of God. And so I want to conclude this morning, and then we'll open the lesson for discussion this morning. Three thoughts or three lessons. We find, first of all, doing the will of God. And that is what Jacob is doing. He's doing the will of God. Conversion prepares for consecration. In other words, the high experiences of life, and conversion in particular, hopefully prepares us for the rest of life that we're consecrated to the Lord. Secondly, then, we would look at Jacob as he experiences the providence of God, the turn of events. Jacob would make his choice on the basis of beauty, but God will make his choice on the basis of his plan and purpose. And it may be in your life that you'll have a lot of choices made that are you think are right. I'm going to follow this pursuit in life. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be an Indian chief because it'll do this for me. It'll put me in a certain place in life. And you may wind up that you're something else, that God has a totally different plan for your life. And so Jacob will experience the providence of God in his life. And then finally, there's this lesson of discovering the justice of God. I have to go back now earlier in Jacob's life. What was he about him? Well, he's crafty. When Esau came in hungry, he took advantage of Esau's unconcern about the birthright, and he got the birthright. But then with subtlety, he, at his mother's direction, will slip in, and Isaac will give him the blessing that was intended by Isaac for Esau. Do you remember what Paul said over in the book of Galatians? Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. I come back to a premise. Come on in. That is, discover the justice of God. Makes no difference if we are a child of God. You can rest assured that what we sow, we can reap. If you don't believe that, study the life of David. Now, David was a man after God's own heart. God never said, I don't like David. In fact, God spoke well of David. But there came a time in his life whenever, by his act, God said, David, the sword will never depart from your house. And boy, that's a sentence that is weighty in our life. Jacob is discovering the justice of God. He discovers deceit and what it really meant, no doubt, whenever he woke up and saw Leah face to face instead of Rachel. Discovering the justice of God. We see some lessons here of great importance, I think, in this particular lesson today.